Chapter 6 "Seven against one," Rodriguez advised whoever was blocking their way. It was not a good situation. The figure standing in the passageway was wearing the same type of Krestang-powered armor, and most likely was more familiar with the alien equipment. While the Delta team could select armor-piercing explosive-tipped rounds from their rifle magazines, they were under strict orders not to risk damaging the irreplaceable starship. Even a ricochet could destroy a vital piece of equipment that had no spare. What truly bothered Rodriguez was not knowing his opponent. The duty officer had assured him no one aboard the ship would or could oppose his team. So who was the armor-suited person blocking his path to the CIC?
"Put your weapon down. Under orders from the..."
"Sorry, couldn't hear you."
The figure shook its head.
"You're intruders aboard our ship. You put down your weapons."
"Our ship," the figure said, a slip Rodriguez picked up on immediately. His opponent felt the ship belonged to them, and the voice was female. Unless the merry band of pirates had snuck someone aboard, he must be facing United States Army Ranger Captain Lauren Poole.
"Captain Poole, step aside. My team will kill you if necessary, but we are taking control of this ship."
Softening his voice, he tried another tactic.
"It is four of us against one of you, and I have three more men in the aft section. You don't stand a chance, and you know it."
Lauren Poole rarely had the opportunity to enjoy herself while in action, especially as much of the action she had seen had required her to babysit Colonel Bishop on away missions. Action meant combat, and that meant chaos, and danger, and death, and there was nothing enjoyable about that. The frantic high-speed nature of modern combat also meant she would not have the time to reflect on whether she was enjoying herself until the fighting was over. Thus, she was determined to enjoy the hell out of this particular moment.
"Really?"
she said in the tone women use when a guy says something egregiously stupid.
"You may want to check your math on that."
Rodriguez opened his mouth to order his team to engage when his suit suddenly lost power. All power. His visor went dark, then faded to clear, providing an unenhanced view in front of him. The soldier to his left slumped forward, trying to stop his fall but unable to move quickly enough without the suit's nanomotors assisting him. While in use, a Krestang suit felt light as a feather. Without power to its tiny motors, it was heavy and awkward, stiff and unyielding. The soldier fell forward stiffly to crash onto his face, bouncing off the deck and bumping into Rodriguez, who nearly fell also.
"Team!"
he shouted before remembering no one could hear him. With the suit's arm resisting him, he reached up with one hand to open his visor. They had procedures for suit power loss, although the subtext of those procedures were of the kiss-your-ass-goodbye nature.
"Team!"
he called out, and centered his rifle on the target. His next word died away as two menacing combots stomped out from doors on either side of Poole. They formed up to almost block his view of the armor-suited ranger, and he heard and felt the deck shake behind him. More of the powerful Thurannan machines were blocking his only option for retreat. The two in front had their large cannons pointed at his chest. As he swayed slightly in the heavy armor, the cannon muzzles moved to track him.
"Those cannons will cause severe damage to the ship," Rodriguez warned.
"Ah, it's happened before, and we rebuilt it," Poole dismissed the issue.
"Can you rebuild yourself, or your team?"
Rodriguez was at a loss for what to do. His orders had not included a scenario in which he faced overwhelming firepower.
"I am not authorized to surrender."
Poole shook her head in disbelief. The Delta Force drew its members largely from the 75th Rangers, from her unit. She did not know Rodriguez, but she might know some of the men with him.
"Are you authorized to die for nothing, you dumb shit? Those are your only two options."
"Captain, please. My superiors..."
"Your superiors are not up here, are they?"
"Hell no."
"Listen, whoever you are."
She could have asked Skippy to identify the intruders, but she simply did not care. Taking a risk, she opened her faceplate and stepped forward, standing on her toes so she could be seen by the opposing team, including the two who had fallen and were lying on their sides.
"Either you drop your weapons and live to fight another day, or you become a temporary dark stain on a bulkhead. I know what I would choose, especially if I were responsible for six other lives."
"Captain."
Rodriguez looked right, then left, being careful not to let the movements overbalance his heavy suit.
"It has become clear that one of us needs to surrender."
The duty officer in the CIC was growing impatient with the glacial pace of the Delta team. She talked with them. She could monitor their progress on location sensors. She could even watch every step they took. Along their way forward, the Deltas confronted and secured Captain Poole, disarming that woman and providing great relief to the CIC crew. Poole was popular with the crew, even with those few people secretly tasked with taking over the ship. The duty officer would have regretted any harm coming to Poole, a steadfast ranger who was only doing her duty to the best of her ability. It was irritating how slowly, carefully, and methodically the Delta team was making their way forward. The team leader insisted his tactics were sound. With the alien dead or disabled, the only dangers that could be aboard the ship were ones the CIC crew could not identify. Accordingly, there was a delay while the Deltas cleared the ship compartment by compartment, working their way forward from the rear cargo bays of the forward section. That cold logic made sense, and it was annoying. Perhaps the duty officer should not have told the assault team leader that the ship was already under control. Thus it was with relief that she heard the distinctive hard clumping sounds of Krestang-powered armor boots on the deck, as she saw on the main display the Delta team coming up the final passageway toward the CIC. And thus it was with utter shock that she saw Captain Poole, her suit faceplate set to clear, walk into the CIC with a hulking combat right behind her. "How come I wasn't invited to this party? This place looks dead. Let's liven it up a little." And she shot the duty officer and three others with stun bolts before they could protest. "Lauren?" Sammy struggled to her feet from where she had been sitting on the deck, her back to a bulkhead. With her wrists cuffed behind her back, it was awkward pushing herself upright. "Sorry, Sammy." Poole kept her faceplate closed in case of trouble. "If you'll turn around." She gestured with one hand. Sammy turned her back to Poole and felt the suit's powerful gloves grip the handcuffs, then snap them easily. "Ah!" When the cuffs broke, the metal bashed against her wrists. "I'm fine." She rubbed her wrists, then stooped to pick up the small pistol somehow snuck aboard by the duty officer who was now slumped unconscious on the deck. "What the hell is going on?" "It's complicated. What you need to know first is Skippy is alive and well." "Large and in charge?" Sammy asked hopefully. She had feared the maser blast might have sent the beer can into another coma-like holiday. "Never better," Skippy's voice boomed out of the speakers. "The Delta Force team is disarmed and locked in a cargo bay. They can't do us any harm." Poole kept her rifle pointed safely at the deck, but in the general direction of the four CIC crew who had backed away from their consoles to avoid a painful stun bolt. "Colonel Bishop is on his way up in a dropship, along with some others." "Outstanding!" Reed looked around the CIC where the crew who were not unconscious were holding up their hands while fearfully watching every move by the armor-suited Poole. "In that case..." She nudged the former duty officer with a foot to make sure the woman was truly down for the count. "Lauren, maybe we better police this mess before the colonel arrives." The prospect of facing people I did not know, people who were not pirates accustomed to how our missions typically operated, had me questioning myself. Did I have a right to essentially steal humanity's only starship and take it on a mission that the majority of the world's governments had deemed foolish, even dangerous and counterproductive? "What's wrong, sir?" Sims cocked a head at me. We were in the CIC getting the equipment set up for departure, while Reed and Porter were handling pilot duties. Smythe had brought three new people with him. One of them was in sickbay being treated for a bruised kidney. After the guy saw the scary medical bots controlled by Dr. Skippy, he may have had second thoughts about leaving Earth. The Dragon dropship from the Yuki Shan had just docked, and I was preparing for appeal to that crew and the Delta team that had tried to capture the ship to join us as renegades. The bullshit speech I gave on Paradise to pull together the original merry band of pirates might have been easier. "Sims," I sighed, "what the hell am I doing?"
"Putting together a crew and giving humanity our best shot at survival."
"Thanks for the vote of confidence. We're all risking our careers, and maybe a long sentence in prison, even if we are successful out there. This is treason. You know that, right?" "Not just technically treason. This is the real deal. We are renegades now. Outlaws. Skippy has blocked orders from reaching our ears, but we know the truth. The army down there is demanding that we hand over control of the ship."
"If they are," she shot me a disparaging look. "They're doing it because the government is telling them what to say,
not because they think surrendering to aliens is a good idea, sir.
It's not that easy. We...
Adams isn't here, Sims observed. This sounds like the kind of pep talk she would give. Would it help if I told you what I think she would say?
I was missing our Marine Corps gunnery sergeant already.
Yeah, actually. Fine. Then excuse me, sir, but that's bullshit. It is that easy. If we stop now, turn the Dutchman over to the UN or whoever, and they'd take her out to reveal the truth to the Jarantha, what will happen to Earth?
I didn't have to answer because she did it for me.
Both sides of the war will come here to fight over our homeworld. Even if we get lucky and the Rindaloo are too lazy to act, the Therenin and Kristang are pissed off at us enough to turn Earth into radioactive slag. The best scenario is they ravage our planet and a small group of humans survive as slaves. You know that. You know that for damn certain. Yet you're still questioning whether to turn this ship over to a bunch of frightened dirtsiders? They haven't been out here.
She gestured to the star map on the main CIC display.
I wish I shared your clarity. Clear thinking is easy, because the issue is simple. Let me break it down for you Barney style.
A ghost of a smile crossed her lips when she said that.
There are only four options, unless I'm missing something.
She ticked the numbers off on one hand.
1. We allow the UN to take the ship out and contact the Jarantha. 2. We hold the ship here and hope the world's governments come to their senses, which means we lose time we may need to stop the Max Hulks. 3. We do nothing and let the Max Hulks come here. And 4. She waved her index finger for emphasis. 4. We take the ship out and give our species a fighting chance.
Sims, I don't have a plan. I have no idea if we can do this.
Do you see a fifth option?
No, I admitted.
Skippy,
she automatically looked toward the speaker in the ceiling.
How about you?
To me, options 1 and 3 are the same. Either way, you monkeys are toast. Option 2 sounds like a gutless way to pass the buck. To answer your question, no, I do not see any other options.
Option 4 is the only possibility in which humanity has a chance to survive.
Her face lost its stern glare, and suddenly, Sims was just another frightened person pleading for me to do something. Anything.
I can't argue with that.
Even if we fail, and the Max Hulks discover we tried to blow up two of their ships, it actually won't be any worse for us.
True, Skippy interjected. There really is no downside for you monkeys.
When he was trying to be serious, I wish Skippy would not refer to my people as monkeys.
Can you? Of course, I also thought there would be no downside to giving the Jarantha a heads up when the Therenin planned a sneak attack, and that totally backfired on us big time. So maybe I'm not the best person to ask.
Sims and I shared a look and shook our heads.
Skippy, I explained.
Sometimes full disclosure is not necessary.
Oh. Isn't honesty always the best policy or some bullshit like that?
There's a difference between deliberately lying and just not mentioning unpleasant facts. I already know not to trust everything you tell me.
That hurts, Joe. Not as much as blindly trusting me might hurt you, but it hurts anyway.
Sims, I turned my attention back to her before Skippy got me off on a tangent. I agree it looks like trying to stop those Max Hulk ships is our only viable option. That's the problem.
That we only have one option?
No, that it's our only option, in my judgment.
Christ, Sims, I'm one person. Do I have the right to make that decision for all the people of Earth?
If their idiotic, short-sighted judgment is suicide for our species, then yes, you have to make that call for them.
She did not have me entirely convinced. No one at my age should have to make life-or-death decisions for an entire world. No one person, no matter their age or experience, should have to make that call.
Maybe if our society is that short-sighted, we don't deserve to survive, I muttered half to myself. Philosophy, sir?
It wasn't
It sure sounded like philosophy.
Her hands were on her hips, and I knew I was in big trouble.
The United States Army does not allow excuses. I'm not sure their view on battlefield philosophers, but I'm betting they're not encouraged.
God damn it, Sims, I'm a soldier.
You're a commander, sir. We need more decisiveness and less namby-pamby whining.
Sims channeled her inner Margaret Adams.
There is an entire planet full of people down there who... Screw them.
What?
Screw them, she shrugged. You don't know those people, so don't make decisions for them. Make a decision for your family. For my family.
for our families. Okay. Got it. Sims, get the ship booted up for a short jump. I have a crew to bamboozle into a truly idiotic scheme. Wish me luck.
You won't have a problem with that, sir, she assured me with a grin, but I noticed there was a catch in her voice. Was she just anxious about her upcoming mission, or was she doubting me as much as I doubted myself?
I won't.
No, sir, she winked. You persuaded me to follow you on Paradise way back when you were a publicity stunt colonel whose biggest accomplishment was planting potatoes.
Great, I muttered. No pressure on me. Before I tried to get people to commit mutiny with me, I needed to talk with the beer can. Hey, Skippy, is the ship squared away now? We're screwed if there was any sabotage and we need equipment from Earth to fix it. Kinda busy right now, Joe. No time to talk. What you need to know is the ship is okie-dokie, I think. I have bots checking everything from nose to tail while Nagatha integrates into... Wait, Nagatha? She's back? Damn, that was the best news I had heard since we returned to Earth. She is not fully operational yet, dum-dum. That's why I said she is still integrating into shipboard systems. Nagatha will be the ship's AI and primary control system, unless you distract me with stupid questions and I screw up her startup sequence. Got it. Keep me updated on her progress. There were three groups of people aboard the Flying Dutchman. A small group of people I could not trust, including the three CIC crew who had pointed a pistol at Reed or tried to blow up Skippy's man cave, plus the leader of the Delta team. Truthfully, I had been hoping the Delta leader would sign on as a pirate, but he told me privately that he felt responsible for his team and he had to go back down to Earth, even if all his people went to the stars with us. That sentiment got my respect, although I was disappointed with the result. The second group were people who flat out told me, or Sims, or Skippy, that they wanted to go back to Earth, and no amount of persuasion by me could change their minds. Everyone else, 44 people, were assembled in a cargo bay to listen to the line of bullshit I cooked up while walking from the CIC. Really, of the 44 possible recruits, three were pretty much a sure thing. The three people who had been on the adventure race team were Smythe. Privately, Smythe had told me he needed an absolute minimum of 8 special operators in addition to himself and Lauren Poole. We also needed pilots, because Jim Porter and Samantha Reed could not fly the ship and drop ships by themselves. While I could probably fly the ship with help from Nagatha, my skills were simply not good enough for delicate away missions and stealthy dropships. My first encounter with the pool of potential new pirates did not begin well. I explained the situation, assuming everyone had already been briefed on the true nature of the Flying Dutchman and Skippy and everything else UNEF Command was still trying to keep hidden from the general public. The information that 2 Maxorc starships were coming to Earth was news to almost everyone, and I should have let that data point sink in before I appealed for people to join the merry band of pirates. Public speaking is not my strength. Also, I'm kind of an idiot, so my speech got interrupted.
We should trust you,
the guy cocked his head, looking to his companions for help. He was a marine raider, one of the group aboard the Dragon dropship at the Yuki Shan who we had lured aboard the Dutchman under false orders.
Sergeant, Colonel, I'm confused.
Him asking that question got me seriously pissed off. Not at him, at the United States Army. I was sick of the theater rank bullshit. It had been years since my promotion to colonel, which had been unorthodox and not confirmed by proper authorities on Earth, but my promotion had been granted by the proper command authorities on Paradise, and they did have authority from Earth. I was no longer the scared and overwhelmed specialist who had been whisked away from my home planet and given an unexpected promotion to sergeant because of a personnel shortage. When or if we ever returned to Earth, and assuming our mission was successful so our return was triumphant, I was not taking any crap from UNEF Command and Army leadership or anyone. Basically, I was done with that shit. Making me change rank every time Earth appeared in the ship's viewports was disrespectful to the fine people I commanded.
Colonel, when I'm up here, I stated while glaring at the guy.
That was different. In the past, I would have shrugged and had a sheepish expression on my face while saying that. Aboard this ship, I jabbed my right index finger at the deck. I am in command.
Yes, sir,
he replied with a slightly questioning uplift on the end when he said sir.
UNEF tried to take the ship away from you.
He looked sideways at the Delta team. They must have talked. That was a mistake. I should have kept the Delta guys isolated. Or maybe not.
I was asking people to volunteer for a mutinous mission that could end their careers even if we succeeded in stopping the Maxalks. People needed to make an informed decision.
But we're supposed to trust you?
Ha! Skippy's voice boomed out of the speakers, then his avatar appeared on top of a crate, glowing nearly 4 feet tall. He intended the larger size to be impressive, but it just made his even more ginormous hat extra ridiculous.
No way, dude! Joe is a knucklehead. I wouldn't trust him to run a lemonade stand.
Skippy, I tried to interrupt, but he was on a roll.
You wouldn't believe some of the stupid shit he has done.
Skippy,
and that is just the stuff he did. Forget about the truly moronic ideas he had that we stopped him from doing.
Skippy, you're not helping.
I'm not helping you, Joe. I am providing useful information to the people you are trying to sucker into this lunatic quest.
We should trust you, then?
The raider added more than a bit of skepticism into his voice.
Well,
Skippy took off his hat and scratched his shiny dome. If you asked the monkeys who have served aboard this ship, they would say that I am absent-minded and sneaky and a bit of an asshole. Stupid monkeys, he added under his breath. That was more than I could take. A bit of an asshole. The guy's eyes flicked between me and Admiral Asshole.
We should not trust any of you?
Skippy's tone lost all of its typical arrogant snarkiness.
You should trust Lieutenant Colonel Smythe. His judgment, other than his awful taste in music, has been flawless since he came aboard the ship for our second mission. He is dedicated, supremely disciplined, and the absolute model of a professional warrior. Any of you aspiring to serve as Tier Zero operators should listen to him.
We're Tier One, a Delta guy snapped. There is no Tier Zero.
Oh, bullshit, Skippy barked back. On Earth, Delta Force, or Detachment Delta, or Task Force Green, or whatever you want to call yourselves, is one of the first choices for U.S. Special Operations, along with Navy SEAL teams. Aboard the Flying Dutchman, Colonel Smythe's team is the only choice. They are Tier Zero. I've read all your classified service records, and...
meh. His avatar made an exaggerated shrug. Some of you took out ignorant amateur terrorists whose training consisted of learning which end of an AK-47 is dangerous. Count me as not impressed, especially since a dozen more terrorists popped up to replace the ones you killed. Aboard this ship, there is no backup, no support, no second chances, and failure means loss of the ship, the crew, and your entire primitive species. Let that sink into your thick monkey skull.
Waving my hands, got control of the murmuring crowd. What Skippy said was harsh. I did not want to start by wounding the considerable pride of the people I was hoping to recruit. It was also true. I want anyone who volunteers to be fully informed, so any questions?
One of the newbies raised a hand.
How long will we be gone, sir?
I do not know, I answered honestly.
How much food do we have aboard?
Asked a guy who immediately got bonus points from me for asking a practical question. An army travels on its stomach. And so do pirates, whether they are merry or newbies. Sims answered that for me. Even if everyone here remains aboard the ship, we have food for 17 months. The questions came thick and fast. I answered as best I could.
To be clear, sir, what is the mission?
Again, I wanted to be completely honest. We fly out through the wormhole, recon where those Maxalt ships are, and stop them from reaching our homeworld.
Can we do that? Realistically?
I looked at Sims, who encouraged me with a thumbs up, so I continued. We have a battered, stolen pirate space truck that may be on its last mission whether we succeed or not, an unreliable asshole beer can, and not enough monkeys to fill a barrel. Against us will be two of the most powerful warships in the galaxy, and whatever we do, we can't allow anyone out there to know this ship exists. To my surprise, that comment did not inspire overwhelming confidence in the newbies. No, I was not being a jackass by making smart-ass comments. I did not know this crew. More importantly, they did not know me. Anyone who signed up for this latest desperate mission needed to know with crystal clarity exactly how badly the odds were stacked against us. I was asking these people to throw away their careers and maybe their lives. I had to give them the unvarnished truth. To their credit, there was some shuffling of feet, and people looked around to see if anyone else was bailing out. But no one did. That was encouraging. Another hand was raised, a different Delta guy.
What is the plan, Colonel?
Currently we do not have a plan fully developed, I admitted.
The truth is, right now, we do not have a plan at all. Don't worry, that's kind of the way we always operate. Shockingly, people looked even less confident after I said that.
That's good enough for me, Smythe declared in a deadpan manner. And damn it, that was not just his British reserve. The guy was bored with all the blah blah blah. He wanted to get on with it. I saw him actually stifle a yawn at the prospect of a desperate mission with no hope of success or even survival.
Lieutenant Colonel Smythe, he pronounced it in the counterintuitive British manner. 22 Special Air Services Regiment. I've been on two missions with Colonel Bishop. Both of them lasted longer than expected, and both of them accomplished more than I ever dared hope. The international crowd of special operations people did not appear to be convinced. It may partly have been their rivalry with the SAS. That reaction caused Smythe to become, the best way to say it is, miffed at some of the newcomers. He looked at the guys who had tried to take the ship.
You are Delta Force operators, eh?
Smythe looked down his nose.
I suppose all of you consider yourselves to be what you Americans call badasses. You may have served in combat. You may even have served with distinction. I can tell you without reservation that whatever you have accomplished in your careers, it is not bollocks compared to the merry band of pirates. Let's have a show of hands, please. How many of you have saved the world? Twice.
No one? Okay, then. How many have saved the Earth even once?
No one. He was laying it on a bit thick. All right. We shall grade this on a curve, then. How many of you have saved the UN X-Force on Paradise 3 times? No one? I'm rather disappointed.
Colonel, this collection of amateurs simply will not do. One of the detachment Delta guys took offense to that.
Hey, we don't have to.
Smythe stepped forward and pointed to an odd-looking medal he wore. I recognized it as a homemade item the Spec Ops people created while we were stuck on Gingerbread.
You see this? It is a dinosaur holding a toilet plunger in its mouth. I received this for jumping out of a stealthed dropship over a heavily populated Kristang city, landing on the roof of a building, launching missiles that sparked an alien civil war. I then fell down an elevator shaft, pretended to be a Kristang police officer, got flushed down a sewer, and chased through a jungle by a genetically engineered dinosaur. That was before my team took out a Kristang ground force without incurring a single casualty to ourselves.
He stepped forward again so the Delta guys could see his decorations. The operation sparked a civil war between the Kristang that will keep them on the sidelines for a decade or more. Nothing you have done in your careers means anything compared to what you could accomplish aboard this ship. Make no mistake, this is the front line for humanity. We are the sharp end of the spear. Nothing that happens down there, he waved a hand in a vague gesture toward a bulkhead, will make any difference to the survival of humanity. The crowd was quiet for several moments, people considering Smythe's words. One thing I knew for certain about elite operators is they wanted their service to make a difference, to not sit on the sidelines when bad things were happening.
That was a good speech, the first Delta guy spoke. Nothing that happens up here, he instinctively pointed above his head, will matter without a plan, a realistic plan. Colonel Smythe, you expect to go into action without a plan?
Certainly. Smythe managed to still look slightly bored with the proceedings. We are ahead of the curve. This time we are leaving Earth already knowing the nature of the threat. Usually we have to go looking for trouble. The aliens are coming to us. For those of you who care, I expect us to find a target-rich environment out there.
Right there I knew we had converts, because there were murmurs of approval going around the compartment. Smythe had accomplished what I could not. He had talked to the Delta Force team as one special operator to another, on their level. Nope, scratch that. Smythe was way above their level, and they knew that for damn certain. Every one of those Delta operators would have given anything to wear the elite symbol of the Merry Band of Pirates. This was their chance. Very likely their only chance. The questions went on for 20 minutes before Smythe caught my eye to cut the discussion short. He was right. The people I was talking to were professionals. More blah 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 from me was not going to persuade them to sign on. What they needed was time to think and talk with each other. And something else. Before you make a decision, you want to speak with your family's dirt side. Colonel Sims has a box of Z-phones. I turned toward her and she nudged the box on top of a crate beside her.
She tossed a phone to me, and I tossed it to a Delta guy who seemed to be very much on the fence about signing up to join the pirates. "Your calls will run through the Skippytel network." I smiled. "So calls will be secure. We can't guarantee someone standing next to whoever you call won't hear that end of the conversation." "That's it?" the Delta guy, whose name tag read Roe, asked. "If we don't sign on, we get a flight down to Earth? No questions asked?" "Yes," I agreed with a simple nod. "No questions," Skippy scowled. "But there will be consequences. If you don't join this crew, and the mission fails because we did not have enough monkeys in the barrel, you will be directly responsible for the death of your loved ones and the extinction of humanity."
"Skippy," I made a slashing motion across my throat. "I'm just saying, you know."
"Colonel," the staff sergeant on the Marine Raider team spoke up.
"That is easier said than done.
My mother passed on 4 years ago. I'm sorry to hear that, Sergeant."
Thank you, sir.
The problem is my father is aboard a nuclear missile sub on hard alert deployment. There is no way I can talk with him."
"Oh." I looked to the avatar on a crate next to me.
"That will not be a problem for our friendly local beer can."